I lived in a subdivision for several years, and the neighbor beside me, they were from Cuba, and they worked really hard to get her mom out of Cuba to come, and they were so excited to get her there. Her mom was a little bit older, and she absolutely, positively, fiercely hated America. And they didn't hate America, like, ideologically. She hated living in America. And, you know, that was a little stunning. You got out of Cuba, right? And so I was asking her, I was thinking, why? And she's like, well, it's like living in a cemetery. The streets are completely and utterly silent. Nobody knows anybody. At night, all the cars go home and go in the doors, and the blue lights come on. And what she was describing is in the subdivision, nobody was on the streets. Nobody was on the front porch. This subdivision, like many subdivisions, didn't have front porches. At night, everybody drove in, opened the garage doors, drove in the garage, closed the garage doors. They didn't even talk to people in the driveway. And the blue lights came on, turned the TV on. And so all of a sudden, the technology that allows us to have no interactions with live people that may or may not look attractive is now something that causes us to constantly look for ways to interact with live people.
Hello, and welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast. I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And today we have a topic that is once again revisiting AI, but from a little bit of a different perspective than you may have heard us before, or perhaps expounding a little bit on what you may have heard us talk about on the podcast before. I recently came across this video that is by a guy on YouTube named Marques Brownlee. We'll have the video linked down below, where essentially there is a company that is showcasing a robot that is powered by AI, and the vision is that it will take care of all of your housework for you. So you can get this robot. For reference, it's humanoid looking, it's 5'6", it has, you know, fully articulating arms, hands, fingers, all this stuff, and essentially, the goal is that, like, you can show it, here's where the dishes go, here's where the dishwasher is, here's where the laundry goes, and you can just kind of give it a tour of your home, and then it will autonomously go and take care of all of these menial tasks for you. It will do the dishes and put them back where you showed it. It will go and do your laundry and fold it for you and put it back in the drawers. It will even get the door for you. You can still ask it questions so it can be connected to a large language model like ChatGPT. So it can just essentially be an extremely smart robotic house assistant for you. It will even go and charge itself when it senses that it's getting low on battery. So you and never even have to worry about that. Now, for all of this, you're either paying a $500 a month convenient subscription fee, or you're paying $20,000 to actually own the thing. So this is not something that most likely you or I listeners are probably going to be affording anytime soon. But I just thought that there could be a lot of interesting possibilities for conversations around the function that this could, or potentially whether or not this robot should serve in our lives. So, Jonathan, I'm just curious to get your initial reactions to just the concept of a robot walking around your home doing your chores.
Well, first, I think the first thing you said was that, you know, you show it where the laundry goes and where all this stuff happens. And I just was thinking that I'm not sure that AI has been developed yet that could figure out the chaos of my house. Like, so, I mean, I think If you really want to test it out on sort of an extreme circumstance, let it come and try to live with us and see exactly how, you know, I'm not even sure where my laundry goes necessarily week to week in terms of its transition from the laundry to my place and back and down without getting intercepted by a bunch of toddlers and messed up and rearranged and all that stuff. So just for context, listeners, David showed me this video. I was actually familiar with this robot. I think it's called Neo, which has some pretty interesting connotations if you're nerdy enough to have watched certain movies. And I was familiar with the concept. And you know, to be honest, David, the first thing that goes through your head is like, oh, I mean, like, what's the joke, right? Oh, that smartphone does everything. It'll do my dishes, right? I mean, this is like, yes, it will do your dishes, right? I mean, and that's the kind of sole purpose of this. And so it's like, finally the Jetsons got here. Finally Star Wars got here. Finally the droids are here. Finally all that stuff. I think the first thing I saw was a comment, somebody asking, you know, can you teach it to shoot a paintball gun? Just wondering. There's some interesting things to wonder there. I mean, there's some really, you know, so it was like, let's take ChatGPT, which hallucinates and is not necessarily always known for doing the best things, and embody it. That sounds like a really great idea. So you're basically saying ChatGPT, which occasionally has encouraged people to commit suicide, now moves around my house. We went from, oh, that'd be cool to get my dishes done, to nightmare fuel pretty quickly. So there's both there's kind of an initial like, wow, that'd be really cool. And then there's a, wow, that could be really scary. But I was going back, David, when you first asked me this, and I was thinking about two things. And the first is, well, let's start here. Let's rewind and say, so it's 2025, so 1925. Is that enough? I don't know, 1915, 1920. If, David, we can get some historical context for that. Mm-hmm. What would you and I have done in our lives in 1920 or maybe 1880 that we don't have to do now? So the first one would be no dishwashers, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Wouldn't even exist.
So no dishwasher. So we'd have to wash dishes by hand. In my house, that would be a fairly substantial chunk of work. Washing machines would be different. Let's get pre-electric, because I don't know if that's 1920, if everything's electrified. I mean, obviously, some places are and some aren't. Right. So, you know, maybe we get to kick back to like 1900. May or may not be electrified. But, okay, so you got laundry's now a pretty big deal as well. All right, what else? What have you got thinking, like, just day-to-day stuff?
Well, I mean, realistically, like, I mean, that's information, too, is one of the big ones. Because at that point, like, you know, you don't even have to go nearly that far back to realize that if you needed information, like, there may not even be nearly as much of a, like, public access to information and to books as we had even just 40 years ago. So that's a huge thing that's different.
Yeah, so that's intriguing in terms of, okay, so we're talking about this robot. This robot lands on some sort of YouTube channel or an internet post, and instantly the world's kind of talking about it. You know, it would have been possible in 1900-ish, around in those times, that, you know, there would be things happening that you didn't know existed, and you could spend decades and not know they existed, right? I mean, like, if it would have to be big enough to get into a few mass-produced communication devices, newspapers primarily, if we're going to jump into electricity, radio maybe, but let's go back to newspapers. And even then, you know, the distribution of those newspapers is slow. And so, you know, when we think about, like, you know, think on any obscure subject, well, we'll just Google that and figure it out. Back then, you may not even have the imagination for the obscure subject. And if you did, it may be patently impossible for you to learn about it.
It's crazy that, we can get updates on what's happening, you know, halfway across the world in Ukraine, you know, pretty much just a few minutes after it happens. And in that time, that would have, if it even it was possible for us to get that information, would have taken weeks.
Right. So, okay, you wouldn't eat bananas in January. You wouldn't eat oranges probably at all, right? Mm-hmm. You may not eat bananas at all. You would have much less choices when it comes to food. Like, you know, it's like go to the local grocery store. You'd have to probably be growing some of your own food. And not everybody, but a lot of people would be.
Central heat and air wasn't a thing. So there was a whole lot of other methods for that.
Yeah, you're shoveling coal, or you're splitting wood, or you're doing something. Transportation would obviously be much different. Even at 1900, we're talking about, you know, the sort of socioeconomic status that we're in. We're probably talking about horse and buggy type situation, feet, so walking. So, okay, so I was just kind of going through those things because one of my first thoughts was, you know, is this a natural progression, and are we nostalgic for the things that we're not doing then? And I think there's some interesting things. What did you say you did this morning, David?
I went out and went for a run.
I don't think anybody was going for a run in 1900. Like, for fun, right? Right. I mean, like let's just think about that for a second. So I don't think anybody is taking a run in 1900 for the heck of it. Like, just because it's like, you know, I'm going to get up this morning and go for a run.
Yeah, unless, like, you're seriously pursuing, like, a professional career in athleticism, which is even less of a possibility then than it is now.
Yeah, you don't even have a lot of high school track teams, but, you know, you maybe got some of the boys to get together and run at the state fair, you know, or the county fair or something like that. But and so, you know, why do you run, David?
I mean, mostly for my health, so that I can just, like, continue to, you know, keep muscle and stay active.
Yeah, so you run mostly for your health. I run too, so, and I would say the same thing. And so, but you know, we both run for two reasons. First is certainly physical. Second is spiritual or mental. I mean, like, there's some clearing of your mind, reducing stress, also, you know, kind of pressing yourself. But that's interesting. People didn't in 1900, I think, because those things were less of a need. There wasn't much of a need for physical fitness if you're splitting all your own wood every day, walking to get to most of the places you need to go to. And with lack of communication, there may not be as much need for mental clarity. I mean, like, you know, there's less to kind of have to sort through and process, which is not to say people aren't people and have some of the same things. All right, so that's interesting. You know, I'm just thinking about food. Like, you know, how many people do you know, David, that are kind of either doing or want to be, quote unquote, homesteaders?
Too terribly many, a handful, I'd say.
But you got a handful, right? I mean, like,
They
and it's
exist, yeah.
definitely, you know, if
They're
you
out there.
look at trends or TikTok trends or something like that, I mean, there's definitely some growing. There's always some level of the population that wants to do that. But, you know, 100 years, 1900, nobody's wanting to be a homesteader. I mean, like,
Yeah,
they're all
that's
working to
not a
get
trend.
off the
That's a
farm.
reality of life.
Yeah. So there's kind of, so, but then the question is, why do people do that? Well, because they're worried about their food sources. They're worried about, they want some connection to their food. They want some connection to the land. They want some connection to reality in some sense. So that's interesting. I don't know. What else, David? Like, what else would we think about here in terms of, you know, what are some things that we're doing that we didn't have to do then because we had to do then? Does that make sense? Like, you know, like you're running now because you didn't have to run then, but you do have to run now because you have to kind of make up for that physical gap sense.
Well, and you know, there was nothing like a Walmart or a Kroger or anything like that back in the day. So if you wanted something specific, like chances were there wasn't some sort of all-stop shop for most of those things. Like if you wanted something specific, you had to go to a specific store, and most likely you had a personal relationship with someone who was in the supply chain for whatever particular product, whether it's food or a desk or chair or, you know, whatever other sort of things that you might be buying, is that like there's much more of a personal relationship rather than just a large corporation that's just manufacturing a ton of these things.
Well, and we can say that there's community, right? So yeah, like, let's be clear. Like, we're not talking about utopia. We're not talking about golden age. We're not saying that everything was better, and there's some obvious things that weren't better. We can get into that. So
Yeah,
I
you
don't
can
want
pretty
to,
clearly compare the life expectancies that are different
well,
in those periods.
we could compare life expectancies. We could compare medical realities. We could compare nutrition. We could compare opportunity. We could compare the ability to kind of live out of your dreams. We could compare things like racism, certainly. We could compare relative
Reading
wealth.
level, yeah.
Yeah, so well, reading well level is probably higher, but we can no, seriously, I mean, like, the literacy rate of colonial America and then on through is absolutely quite stupendous compared to today. So let's not get confused. We're not talking about a golden age, and we're not talking about some nostalgia for things that are past. I'm just more interested in thinking about, like, what are the things that people were doing then that they didn't have to do that people say, oh, that's a relief, but then they try to turn around and replace them. So, for example, you know, we see this in the kind of business that we're in. People are starving, dying, just so hungry for community. You know, that's because technology has removed the need. You know, I lived in a subdivision for several years, and the neighbor beside me was, they were from Cuba, and they worked really hard to get her mom out of Cuba to come, and they were so excited to get her there. Her mom was a little bit older, and she absolutely, positively, fiercely hated America. And they didn't hate America like ideologically. She hated living in America. And, you know, that was a little stunning. You got out of Cuba, right? And so I was asking her, I said, you know, why? And she's like, well, it's like living in a cemetery. And I said, what do you mean, what it's living in a cemetery? And she said, well, the streets are completely and utterly silent. Nobody knows anybody. At night, all the cars go home and go in the doors, and the blue lights come on. And what she was describing is, in the subdivision, nobody was on the streets. Nobody was on the front porch. This subdivision, like many subdivisions, didn't have front porches. At night, everybody drove in, opened the garage doors, drove in the garage, closed the garage doors, didn't even talk to people in the driveway, and the blue lights came on, turned the TV on. And so technology, you know, replaced the need to deal with your neighbor. Now, in 1900, you might have a lot of people say, I don't have to deal with my nasty neighbors. I don't have to deal with the jerks of the general store. I don't have to deal. I mean, like, that could have been a relief. That could have been a posited as an advantage. And yet, you know, jump forward, and all of a sudden, the technology that allows us to have no interactions with live people that may or may not look attractive is now something that causes us to constantly look for ways to interact with live people. So I'm just thinking about that. I'm trying to, like, project that forward and say, all right, so Neo comes in and he does all your dishes and he does all your vacuuming and et cetera. What I think that the utopian vision here, in fact, I looked at the company's website. And their kind of front video shows a somewhat older couple playing cards, which I thought was a very interesting choice. Playing cards at a coffee table while the robot's going back and forth behind them and, like, opens the door, carries in the groceries, is dusting the bookshelf, running a vacuum cleaner. And the implication is, we can spend all this time talking, you know, the older couple, it seemed like they're smiling and getting along really fabulously, and they're playing cards together. And so the implication would be, you have more time for relationships. My question would be, David, does that is there historical precedent for that being an accurate vision of what would happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an excellent question to be thinking on, because really, like, there's just this always with technology, there's always like a cost in human element to it. You know, like, for example, you can even think of careers like phone switchboard operators that are completely gone now. And, you know, back in the time where those were prevalent, there was a decent chance where if you were on the phone regularly, especially as a business person, you were regularly interacting with people who are in the switchboard operator office. And you were actually, there's a decent chance that you would be able to have some sort of brief rapport with them even at some points. But, you know, that's something that's completely gone now. I'm not saying that we should go back to that time necessarily. Right. I think that our current system is significantly better. We can just hit a button and we can immediately contact exactly the person we're contacting. But I'm just saying that, like, there is just an element of that advancement now where there is no longer an additional element of human interaction because of that advancement. And that's, again, not necessarily a bad thing in and of itself. It's just all of these little things bit by bit over time that have just added up to the point where we're here now, and it shouldn't surprise us at this point that feelings of isolation and loneliness are at an all-time high, and we are having anxiety and depression rates absolutely skyrocket because people's actual real human interaction levels have gotten reduced so much by just these daily habits that you're talking about, because people are not intentionally participating in community. And it's just a challenge because, you know, I'm somebody who's passionate about technology. I love finding new ways to make a process more efficient, and I get excited about the possibilities of, you know, a robot who can interact with its environment and be able to tell, oh, this is where the dish should go. Like, just all of the technology that goes into that, I think, is super cool. Like, it's a lot of fun to look at and to see the possibilities of how we can make things like that work. And, you know, like, they bring up the fact that it's in the home of an elderly couple. This could be really, really helpful right. for certain groups of people, like the elderly or people who have mobility issues, like someone who is suddenly wheelchair bound and isn't able to, like, reach the certain levels and just needs help with certain activities. This could be a major help for them. And so there's a lot of benefits to that. I guess there's just also the possibility of, what do we lose when we give up a lot of those other essential things? Because I think that those everyday mundane tasks that we just think about the possibility of offloading, I think there's just an element of that that is a part of what keeps us grounded as people. You know, I think there's the example that we often think of the out-of-touch billionaire, you know, that just has people that, you know, do all of their yard work and keep and take care of all the things in their million-dollar mansion. And essentially, that's kind of the dream that is being offered to, and that's being made more accessible now. It's still not terribly accessible, but more accessible now.
Well, I don't know, man. $20,000, I mean, that's a cheap car these days. I mean, we're close to mass market, I would say. I mean, like, so this is probably what most expensive is going to be. I mean, if you talk about mass producing things, I mean, that they tend to start out high. I mean, that to me, when you said 20,000, I would have thought there'd been a one before that two. You know, I would have thought $120,000. Mm-hmm. So 20,000 to me sounds, you know, pretty. Yeah, not as expensive as one might think.
We know. It's tough to find the right resources for your high schooler. That's where Equip by Unbound comes in. This program for 9th through 11th graders combines Christian worldview training, coaching, and hands-on projects that help students apply what they're learning in real life. By year's end, they'll have stronger skills, clearer direction, and more confidence for what's ahead. Prices are going up soon, so now's the time. Learn more at beunbound.us/equip.
I wonder, so you said the billionaire thing, and I was thinking along those same lines. Have you ever seen, and this is for the listeners and for David as well, have you ever seen the show or read the PJ, what's that guy's name? Anyhow, Jeeves and Wooster. Have you ever seen the Jeeves and Wooster show?
Nope.
We're talking about an old British show that most sane people don't watch. And so PJ Wodehouse is wrote the books, Jeeves and Wooster. And most people know Just Ask Jeeves. I think there was an internet site that's probably now long gone.
I've heard of Ask Jeeves.
So here's the point I'm driving at. Jeeves was the butler, okay? And so the P.G. Wodehouse books and then the show was this comedic thing where, you know, the butler, who's considered to be the servant, clearly has all the brains in the outfit, and the young gentleman that he takes care of is a complete idiot, right? A nice, affable idiot, but still an idiot. And so the interaction is, you know, the idiot getting into problems and then his butler sort of getting them out of it. But it's not his butler, it's his valet or valet, depending on how you pronounce it. Mm-hmm. It's the gentleman's gentleman, I think, is the thing. Now, it's a fun show. My family has some quirky British humor type stuff, and so we've watched them. And I can recommend it as a fun show. But the point that has always been fascinating to me is that would have been a time when a proper English gentleman, not maybe necessarily of our socioeconomic status, David, but not too far above us, that would have been standard, that they'd have a valet. And you know, get a little higher up and you have a butler. And then, you know, there was a time period, and there's a lot of interesting racial and economic factors to play in this, but there was a time period when upper middle class would have assumed that they would have had a cook, maybe a gardener, a housekeeper. You know, I mean, like those kinds of things would have been fairly standard. And so I'm always a little bit curious, like, is there a market for valets out there these days? I mean, do people have butlers anymore? Like, does Bill Gates have a butler? Does Elon Musk have a butler? Because you can't.
Good question.
You don't really think about them as having it. Yeah. I mean, I assume the queen. The king's dead. Sorry, I'm assuming the king has a butler, right? I mean, like, you expect that to happen.
Right.
But, like, you know, think about your typical, you know, American tech bro billionaire or tech sis. I'm not trying to be, you know, one gender here. But, I mean, do they have – we hear them say, like, some of them have personal chefs, but that's kind of like a high-end job. They have personal trainers, maybe some chauffeurs out there. I don't know. Valets and butlers aren't so much a thing anymore. But, all right. A little more homeschool for you. Did you ever read the Bobbsey Twins? I think you're probably too sophisticated.
Not familiar with that one either.
Okay, that's fine. It's the Bobbsey Twins were like these little, I don't know, it was like a corporate, it's like the Hardy Boys in the sense that you know, they had multiple authors under one pen name, formulaic plot, stuff like that. But if you read some of the early ones, and these are probably banned now, you know, they have a cook and they have a housekeeper. Mm-hmm. But they're not a rich family. Like the plot line is not that these are super rich. The plot line is that this is a fairly normal American family with four kids. And so that's considered to be kind of normal. Okay, so I don't know where that actually falls in reality. You know, if we're back in 1920 or 1900, how many people actually have household staff?
Right.
But there was a period of time when upper middle class household staff was fairly normal. And so what did that do to those people? In other words... Mm-hmm. Yeah, you said out of tech billionaire, but upper middle class family in 1900, 1910. Let's set aside the racial implications of certain parts of the country. Okay, so that there's something serious there, but we're not talking about that on this particular subject.
Right.
So let's get you in a place where you're paying these people, right? There's no racial component to this, and you know, you have a housekeeper that cleans the house, and you have a cook that cooks most of the meals. So mom, especially. Is now what? A little bit more freed up to do some things. The family's got... Was that an out-of-touch family? And did they have a nostalgia for that? And where did that... You know, I think it was an economic factor that made that untenable in terms of not having people wanting to pay for that. But that would be an interesting parallel because that's close to what we're looking at here, right?
Yeah. That is an interesting question. The thing I would wonder on that, though, is... How would we today make use of that same freedom of opportunity, that same freed up time?
Would watch YouTube videos clearly.
When then, right?
So, play video games. Yeah, that's
yeah. Would we?
They might have written a book, or that's so. Culturally, so in a time when there was less distractions and less communication, you could maybe spend the time to learn those things that you otherwise couldn't have learned because you had some of that free time.
We are more efficient than we ever have been, possibly, as a society, technologically, culturally. We have far more mechanisms to have more time to do things than ever possible, and yet we seem to be busier than possible and more isolated and just have our nose to our grindstones that look something like this more than we ever have before. And I think I don't think that necessarily says specifically about how bad advances in technology that makes us more efficient are. I think that says a lot about how our mindset is operating on what we're doing with it.
Well, and that gets to the heart of something I was thinking about here with this, David. I'm glad you said that, is that last night I taught one of our live sessions for our Navigate course that we have. There was a pretty large class in last night. Of course, taught online, so there's a little technology aspect there. And the heart of this particular segment of Navigate is, you know, to think about life purpose theory and life purpose practice. And I start by saying, hey, we live in this really interesting time where you get to, like most of you are actually stressed out about finding your life purpose. And just so you know, that's a crazy thing to be stressed out about for most of people in history. You know, like the vast majority of people that have ever lived, have ever drawn breath on this planet, never thought about life purpose. Their life purpose was to survive till tomorrow or to next year or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And so the fact that you get to worry about it and that you're stressed about it, that's a phenomenal, unbelievable, crazy sliver of the population, the percentage ability to do that. And you should, you know, at some level be grateful for that. And I don't mean that in like you ungrateful wretches. I mean it more like sometimes it's just like some perspective is helpful here. And it's a good thing for us to remember. And then we go on and we argue and we say, you know, to find your life purpose, most people think, you know, even the church teaches sometimes, you know, God has given you a purpose and you have to discover what that purpose is. Just for the record and to put our cards on the table, I think that's garbage. I think that's a stupid, absolutely ridiculous assertion on all multiple levels. And you know, if you ever want to hear my real opinion about that, just sign up for Navigate. But but what I argue is say is like, as a Christian, you already know what your purpose is, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and your neighbor as yourself. Mm-hmm. And so then we teach the students, we say, well, there's the process here. It's purpose first. And then when you know that purpose, it gives you the freedom and the ability to act. And my thesis for this is that as humans, ideas precede action. I don't know why that looks. Maybe instinct precedes action in animals. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how that all goes together. But we can definitely, as a bona fide card-carrying human, I know that ideas precede action. Bad ideas precede bad actions. Good ideas precede good action. If you don't know that, you can look up any YouTube fail video. You know, it's the version of hold my beer would be the bad idea precedes action, right? Okay.
So, another way to look at it is that we like to think that we make logical decisions and that we don't have emotions, but really all that we're doing is we're just coming up with logic to justify our emotional decisions.
Amen,
95%
brother.
Of the time.
That's a fantastic thesis for our tactical communications class, which we're going to teach tonight, by the way. And so ideas precede action. And so, but action is how you actually figure out and move forward in life. So, you know, we tell students, if you want to figure out what you do in life, you don't sit there by thinking, navel-gazing, going, well, I thought, oh, I want to be a CPA. That's what I want to do in my life, right? I mean, some people get there, and that's a gift. Most people don't. You get it by doing things. Oh, I like numbers. I like organization. I like helping businesses. So, okay, now I should be a CPA. Like, you have to get out there, and you have to do some things, and then you have to fail, and you have to try, and you have to take action, and then you have to decide, and you have to reflect. You have to, you know, did this work, did it not? But to take good action that you don't mind failing at, you have to have a good idea to precede it. And the good idea is, you know, your purpose. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, your neighbor as yourself. All right. All that was preamble for, you know, then we tell students there's not a magic formula here, but there is a call to live deliberately. The people that deliberately ask those questions are people that get farther ahead than people that don't. And so in this kind of context, we should live deliberately, right? What does it mean to love the Lord our God with all our heart, mind, and soul, and our neighbors, ourself? And will Neo help or not help with that? And I think that that's less of a binary answer and more of an intention answer. Because I tell you, David, I'm thinking about my own life, and I'm literally going, I got to get a new minivan, which, you know, you could pay. I'm probably not going to pay $20,000 for, but you could pay $20,000 for.
Right.
If instead I could pay $20,000 for a robot that would let my extraordinarily hardworking wife get a few more hours or a day a week free from some of the routine stuff that we're doing all the time.
There's an argument to be made.
I don't think she's going to fill it with YouTube channels. Right?
Probably not.
I think she's going to fill it with two little rugrats that run around here and take up a lot of time and stress and energy. And so in that sense, that sounds incredibly attractive. On the other hand, I'm haunted by the fact that you went running this morning, and if I had a little more time today, what I'd really like to do is go down and split wood. And I'm splitting wood because we have failed to move into the 21st century, and I'm still heating the house primarily with wood, so that's a whole separate situation. But I'm also doing it because I like to split wood, because splitting wood is one of the few things I do in my life where there is something that starts and then there's something that's finished. There's a pile of wood that needs split, and when we're done, there's a wood rack full of wood, and it represents something honest and useful, and it means that I'm going to be heated through the winter, and just so you know, if I don't split wood, I'd have to burn oil and live in an old farmhouse, and that, you know, when the furnace turns on, I hear my bank account drain. So there's, you know, I'm not going to freeze to death if I don't split the wood, but my bank account is going to mean that I'm going to go bankrupt instead. And so there's something about that. So, you know, could Neo split my wood? Probably, but I wouldn't want him to, because that's one of the few things that I do that I actually feel like I can see progress on, which is not to say I dislike the rest of the things I do. It's just that there's something real about splitting wood that I'm loath to get up. Just like there's something real about running. You and I are both runners that, you know, if you told me that I could take a pill and get the same results, there is attraction to that, but it's not really.
No, not at all.
I don't know. Give me what. React to that, David.
I think you're right. I like that you said that it's not necessarily as a matter of, how did you put it? It's not a binary decision. Right. It's what was the way you put it?
Well, I said I think that, you know, this living deliberately is to, you know, what does it mean to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and neighbor as yourself? Now, there's a binary aspect to that, in that, you know, that probably means you shouldn't shoot them. I mean, like, you know, like right. there's some moral clarity there. But in certain situations, you know, does that mean that you should or shouldn't use Neo? I don't think that that's a yes or no answer. I think that has a lot to do with your motives and your heart. Mm-hmm. But the thing with motives and heart is that you can't just glide into that. Because from a Christian standpoint, we would say, if you glide into that, we know what the answer is going to be. It's going to be desperately wicked. Right? So there's you have to know your heart, and you have to ask. And you know, given the choice, you're going to let Neo do more and more things that allows you to be more and more sinful, frankly. Just to be like almost shockingly crude about it, and I'm not trying to do it because I'm trying to be ugly, but like, put Neo into the life of most men, perhaps even single men, but maybe married men as well. Give them a lot of free time, and the result is not likely to be literature written and fancy things done. The result is likely to be more pornography consumed.
Yeah.
And without constantly examining that motive and looking at that, and I use pornography because it's kind of an extreme, but also because there's a trend there, right? It's real. And so like, given without active resistance to that, on the other hand, give Neo to some people and, you know, you're looking at the ability for somebody to create the next big thing, the best beautiful piece of art, to write a phenomenal story. I mean, like you know, there's certainly a situation where you inject Neo into somebody's life and they can do something they never could have done before and is really wonderful. But I think that requires a pretty intense input of energy and clarity to get there. And that's the challenge.
Yeah. I think there's a lot that has to be set up intentionally aside from just, do I have this thing that will free up more of my time? It's just, have you set up the rest of your life? Have you set up your value structures, the way that you have set up your daily habits and just the routines and just the choices that are almost by default at this point that most of us make day in and day out? Because I think you touched on this earlier, is that by default, a lot of us, you know, tend to go more towards things that are leisurely or that waste time, or and so we have to train ourselves a lot to eventually want to go about doing those things that are ultimately better for us, may end up taking more time, but are harder. You know, for example, like, I had to train a lot for myself to be able to get to the point where I enjoyed running. For about the first 6 months where I was doing it,
right,
I hated it every single time.
And it's painful.
It was very painful. It was very painful. I felt like I was terrible at it. I kind of was terrible at it. And it just, like, I knew it was ultimately good for me, so I just had to keep making the decision to just get on the treadmill for however long I could do it and just do it over and over again. And this is not some, you know, way of saying, you know, David is amazing at coming up with habits. This is just the reality of how all of us end up making choices, is that the way that you train yourself to be able to use your time wisely is you just have to be able to make those hardest choices day in and day out and understand what that time and what those choices add up to doing.
And that is, and so here's, here's perhaps where the biggest danger lies, right? So, David, you know, you have to train yourselves to do, you had to go through the pain, you had to go through the suffering, you had to go through the endurance, you had to go through the breathlessness, you had to have the discipline to do that. And the result was, yeah, you like running. Oh, that's not the only result, man, clearly, right? I mean, like, the result is all the spiritual training and the physical training and the ability to endure discomfort and to push through and to have a bigger vision and to work on it, stuff like that. Those, you know, you could stop running tomorrow and those things are likely to transcend. And my guess is that your ability to learn how to run impacted how you do your job, how you deal mm-hmm. with relationships, how you, like, you know, so many things. And so now it's like, okay, well, if you don't have to do that, now, but it's not a complete equivalency. We're not talking about David taking a pill and getting running fitness. We're talking about David not having to wash dishes so he can have a little more time running. But at what point does that technology, whether it's Neo or something else, enable you to do something that would have taken perseverance and work, which means mm-hmm. you're getting robbed of the spiritual training and the spiritual discipline and the riches that come past that, which we know, you know, being a runner, having that ability, I'm guessing, as a runner, transforms your entire perception of what you can and can't do, it not really just does. Physically, right?
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah, well, and to take it to another step, you know, thinking about doing dishes, when I walk by the sink and see that there's a bunch of dishes there, pretty much every single time there's a part of me that just goes, ugh, I do not want to take care of that.
I'm going to let Molly do that.
Yeah. Right, there's a part of me that wants to say that.
I'm going
to
let my kid do it. Yeah, right. So.
Right, right. But then whenever, like, you go and you say, you know what, I don't want to do that, but I'm going to do it anyway, partially because, like, I just want it taken care of, but also partially because, and because now that means that the other people, this is something that takes care of the other people that I love
right.
who live
yeah,
in
like,
this household.
Here's an act of service. So what happens yes. when you see that sink full of dishes and say, Neo, chop, chop, get on this boy, and the robot comes over and washes it, not quite the same. And earns you the same kind of capital with your spouse as, you know, it's not my chore, it's not my night, it's mm-hmm. not however you divide things up.
And right, it's like, right. And do it. Yeah, it's just part of those, like, daily moments of self-sacrifice where you just go to the and take the opportunity to say, like, hey, this is not convenient for me, but because that is the way that Christ taught me to live, is to live to be able to serve others and hold their needs above my own. This is a small way where I'm putting that into practice on a daily basis. Whenever I look at the dishes, say, ugh, I don't want to do this, but choose to do it anyway out of love. And it's hard at first and it gets easier over time. I think when we lose out on more of those little self-sacrificial disciplines, we end up losing out on a lot more than just a little bit of time that we end up putting towards something that isn't as useful.
So you're saying if I sold my motorcycle and bought Neo, I'd have to sell two or three or four of my motorcycles, four or five of my motorcycles to buy Neo, the kind of motorcycles I ride. But anyhow, that, you know, would that be an act of sacrifice and love? Yeah, that I mean that slightly. I'm saying that a little bit tongue in cheek, but there is a important mm-hmm. connection to that. So, well, I feel like we could go all Joe Rogan and probably talk about this for another 2.5 hours and get somewhere. But I'm not entirely sure that, unlike Joe Rogan, everybody would stick with us for 2.5 hours. So this was not something that we came into. In fact, we had a quick discussion. We said, let's not talk about this before. Let's just jump on this and start the recording and think about this. And so I would submit to you, maybe if we do pull some conclusions from this, is that I don't know whether you should own Neo or not, or buy Neo mm-hmm. or use it or all those kinds of things. I would be loath to kind of make a commitment one way or the other. But I am utterly and totally convinced that to live deliberately, to think clearly about what we choose to do and how we spend our time, and to understand the implications of that, especially in areas of, you know, will this train me spiritually? Will this train me physically? Will this enable me to do an act of service to somebody else? I don't know how those things all fall in interaction with having a robot that washes your dishes, but I do know those are essential questions. And if you fail to deliberately question and answer those questions, then you will inevitably choose incorrectly. That from a Christian worldview, you will trend towards doing the things that are selfish, doing the things that are not healthy, doing the things that do not train your flesh, but instead weaken it. And it's worth knowing that as you look at all these things, whether you're using ChatGPT on your computer or whether you're actually inviting Neo in to open the door, haul the groceries, dust the bookcase, and wash the dishes.
Yeah. So. And I think on top of that, that's an excellent way to put it. And on top of that, how is this enhancing or detracting from the people around you and your community, I think is another really important factor. It could be from that, it could be enhancing or detracting from how much time you're participating in community and also how you're serving the others around you. And the answer may be yes, the answer may be no, but that is also an essential part of thinking through something like this and something that I think we should all think more about in this context of technology and just in the everyday choices that we make is how is this going to affect the other day-to-day people that I am in community with on a regular basis.
Absolutely. And if you're looking for community, I can offer you a 100% Neo-less community in the form of Unbound. Whether you are a high school student interested in our Equipment Explore programs or whether you are post-high school and interested in our SEND programs, we can tell you that even without Neo to do our dishes, this is one of the most famous, one of the most amazing, and I was going to say fabulous, and some of that crossed into famous communities that I've ever been a part of in terms of people who really care, who are serious about living deliberately, who are asking those hard questions and are sharpening each other as they try to ask those questions and answer them together. And if you're looking for a place that helps you guard from falling into that weakness, spiritual weakness, physical weakness, and just kind of laziness, this is a community that constantly pushes and challenges its members, and I would love for you to consider being a part of it. You can go to beunbound.us to check that out. Might pitch something else here in terms of telling you that if you say, well, you know, I'm interested in that, but I'm not sure how that works, or sometimes it's like, well, I heard on a podcast, but are those people real? I mean, who knows, David? We could be AI generated at this point. Although, I honestly think if I was AI generated, I'd both sound and look a little better. But anyhow, I
we would hope so, wouldn't we?
Yeah, I mean, well, David, at least has got the AI generated voice for sure. So, but he sounds better than any AI you've ever heard, so you know it's authentic. But the point here is, if you want to get a sense of what this looks like and how this works, something we're doing a lot more of this year is that we've got a crew and a team of people that would love to come to your neighborhood. And if you can put 10, 15 plus people in our seats, we'd be delighted to come to a live presentation. That presentation would be, you know, sort of a synthesis of the things that we've learned over this past year as we've been working with our students, and we would be delivering value to anybody that came, but in the process would also give you some immediate hands-on and in-person instruction and a look at what we do in Ascend, in Equip, in Explore, and what we do at Unbound. And if you're interested in that, you can go to beunbound.us and you can contact us, and we would be delighted to work with you in the details of how to set that up. In the meantime, if you want a sort of insider look of what that looks like, stick around and you can hear one of the testimonials from one of our students who was actually in the Ascend program. Thank you so much for listening. If you happen to have purchased a Neo or even rented one, I would be interested in hearing from you and how that all worked out for you. And if they indeed can wash the dishes, because I'm honestly still considering that bit. So until next time, Neo or not, be unbound.
Hi, my name is Chloe Siever. I just finished my Ascend Foundations year, and I'm starting my challenge year. I remember when I first started Ascend, I had just graduated high school, and I was very confused on what my next steps were going to look like and how I was going to take the things that I was passionate about and turn them into a career one day. So going into Ascend, I did not know anybody. I had no friends, no one I knew had done it, and so it was a very new thing for me. Kind of an intimidating thing, honestly, doing something with people that you do not know, with a program you're not super familiar with. But I did it. And I can say now, after being in it for one full year, it has been the most amazing thing ever. The relationships that I've made, the friendships that have formed, are some of the strongest that I think I've had in my entire life. Everyone is just so easy to talk to and genuine. And that was something that was really new to me. I've never had a lot of friends or even made friends very quickly. And so that was something that was just so inspiring to me and really inspired me to want to be that kind of person for people in my local community. And I've already seen how those relationships that I have built through Ascend have impacted the relationships I have in my local community and how I treat them. And so that's been a super cool personal thing that I've seen growth in and just gain a lot of wisdom from. And again, best friendships I've had. Professionally, I've had so many cool opportunities coming up with over this last summer. I was in the digital marketing track this year with Ascend, so I got to learn a lot of skills through that, which ultimately led to the opportunity for me to do an internship with a digital marketing business that I'm still doing and will carry into the fall. And so that's just a really cool professional win and really cool opportunities how I've seen how the things I learned this end can be translated in both professional and personal settings. And just the impact and practical things that can help with are just so amazing. And so, yeah, definitely super cool, very practical, very solid Christian program. And I would say if you're considering doing it, you're not really sure what the outcome will be, I'm here to tell you, you will not regret it. It's just 1 year and you will walk away with some of the best friendships and memories and experiences and opportunities, some of the best ones probably out of your life.